Hi, this is Kevin Clark. I'm Senior Editor-in-Chief Correspondent for America Magazine. We'll be talking today with Dino Muljanovic. He is the country representative for Serbia, operating out of Belgrade for Catholic Relief Services. Dino, can you tell us, we are seeing unprecedented images from Hungary and Serbia, Macedonia. What is happening in Europe in the past week and a half or so?
Yeah, it has started. It started in July already. Basically, the increase of influx of refugees and economic migrants started coming from Greece and Macedonia toward Serbia, and those numbers are like slightly increasing day by day. So people are coming, desperate, exhausted, robbed on the way, and in their seek for shelter in Western Europe, transiting through these countries.
Now, this crisis has been brewing for years now. The Syrian crisis began 4 years ago, the Syrian conflict. What is happening? It seems like all of a sudden this has escalated dramatically. Does anyone have an idea why?
What we can see, I'm very often in a temporary shelters in refugee aid points, and I also talk to people who are refugees, and they're like situated in parks of Belgrade, Serbia capital, and they say like those who are coming from Syria, they said like that basically the violence is exaggerating, and they're simply now finding the way to leave. And some of them, they started their travel long time ago and spent some time in Turkey or in some other countries in nearby Syria or somewhere else in Northern Africa. And they're coming at this moment now. But, this is what we are seeing here is just a result. We are not dealing with the cause. That's the thing. So we cannot clearly say what is going on at the moment, apart that it's like something very horrible.
Is it the fact that, now when you say these people started their journey, how long ago would it have been? Like months, weeks ago?
Some of them are like started like a month ago. Some of them are like started like 2 years ago and spent some of their time in some camps in Turkey, or they just worked in on my English, it's like plantage, like some crops somewhere. Uh-huh. And they're like saved some money and they started traveling. But some of them, they just started like 3-4 weeks ago somewhere in Syria. They ended in Turkey, then they traveled through Turkey, then they ended on some boat, and then in some Greek island of Kos or Lesbos, and then they traveled like to Greece and then to Macedonia and further to Serbia and on their way up there.
So it's not the Angela Merkel opening, the invitation in Germany last week for asylum seekers. That's not really what's provoking this. This has been brewing for a long, long time.
Yeah, definitely. It started long, long time ago.
Okay. Now you say these people, some have been traveling for months. What are the conditions of the people when they reach the borders and you're working with them? What are you finding? What are their physical conditions? What are their needs?
Their major needs are like for some refreshment, basically for water and sanitation, because they couldn't use bathrooms for a while. They're exhausted and they need the medical care because they're, they have a pain in their muscles. Their feet are swollen because a lot of their travel is on the feet. At least those parts of the travel that are related to the crossing the borders, because they cannot use the regular transportation means to cross the border because they're crossing that illegally on the side, So they, apart from that, they're like super tired and exhausted. They're just hoping, they're trying to find a hope in a better life somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And it's something scary happening because, they're passing through the continents. I said it to my colleagues in a Catholic Relief Services, we had a conflict in Bosnia and in Croatia, and it was like former Yugoslavia. And, a further point that somebody will need to go from was like 500 kilometers from one location to another. These people are passing continents.
So it's an unprecedented scale of movement.
Exactly. That is, totally unprecedented, yeah.
Yeah. So now the women, many people seem to be coming with very small children. How are these children holding up?
But they're getting like, I cannot say they're getting well, but they get like regular dose, you know, diseases such as like cold, cough, that kind of things. But, you know, those are exhausted children, but somehow they're like, you know, they put them in bed somewhere to sleep during the night. And then, you know, they're like just exhausted and in need for, again, what I said, their parents are doing their best. You know, if they decided to put their kids in on the ship, you know, on the sea, on such a big travel, somehow they prepared to provide some kind of help to them while on the travel. But again, those people are with the limited resources, you know, they need help, they need shelter, they need respite, and they need to return and repossess their dignity, you know, what they're like trying hardly to have all the time.
But what is happening when they reach the what you've seen in the border? Have you been to the Macedonian border, or are you?
I've been to Macedonian capital, and I just saw them traveling. But basically, I was not literally on the border itself. But I saw all the images, and I had my colleagues going down.
Authorities in Hungary and Serbia and Macedonia have been criticized. What are you guys seeing in how they respond to the migrants and the refugees? And really, what do the other European powers expect these states to do?
This is I will just have to correct you. Like, basically, government of Serbia was not criticized at all. You know, the criticized governments are governments of Greece and governments of Macedonia and governments of Hungary. Because yes, the thing is like Greece is very prolific. You know, they're just letting people go and they don't want to intend to stay in a country of Greece because at the moment it's like high economic crisis. And also, Greece as a country of EU does not have the very well-developed asylum system, what will provide them protection, although it's an EU already. Macedonia, it's like a very tiny country of former Yugoslavia, so basically entire travel from the south to the north is like maximum 2 hours, and there was like a lot of disputes between Greece. This is where we're already getting into political, what I don't want, but there's like a lot of disputes between those two countries, and eventually, they're just like letting people, both Greeks and Macedonians, just letting people go. And they had, if you remember, like 2 weeks ago when they had those people on no man's land, it was like 3,000 to 10,000 people in one moment, like between two countries. That was like a huge problem and that was much criticized. And when they arrived to Serbia proper, when they managed, they found first shelter as soon as they crossed, like got water, got access to bathroom and shower facilities, some kind of rest, and then they got registered prior they're continuing their trip. So and according to the Hungary, that is again, I believe, political thing, what I cannot describe, and I'm not here to describe it, but they're like constructing that fence.
Yeah, the razor fence, you know, razor wire fence.
Hungary has, you know, that is again, like, I don't know why they're doing that, but they're not letting freely people to come in to their country. And the reason for that is, like, if they get registered, I'm just now doing that for sake of explanation. If they got registered, somebody who is looking for asylum, obligation of the Hungary at the end will be to host all those people if it cannot be accommodated in other EU member states, you know?
And Hungary already has about 15,000 refugees.
Yes, they have a lot of people at the moment, about 50,000. And at the moment, it's like everything is blocked. And they have their major railway station blocked in downtown of Budapest. So they have people trying to get in, but they don't want to send trains anywhere. So even Austria is like now increasing, trying. They're speaking about like more control between the borders of those countries that are not existing anymore, you know, since United Europe, they removed all those border passings. So
there's two ways Europe could go, either being more generous with asylum policies or being more restrictive. And where do you think it's gonna end up here? If Austria is talking about restoring border crossings that they haven't had for decades.
That is the thing, you know. The answer is I really don't know. What we have dealing here is a humanitarian problem of people in need. In need for food, for shelter, for water, for non-food items, for clothes, for stuff like that. And we are treating the cause, and we are treating the result, something what is the result of the problem somewhere else. The problem is like it is like obviously that we need to develop. Not, you know, I don't know what will Europe do. That is something else. I'm a humanitarian organization guy, but definitely at this moment there's a huge failure of treating refugees and migrants.
In a humanitarian failure, you mean?
It's humanitarian failure. Yes. The thing is like I'm putting a lot of things on my Facebook account, but basically. All those people are mostly relying on volunteers and on not many organizations took responsibility to provide them help. Most help is received from individuals who just associated among themselves and decided to help them directly. Of course, all those migrants, for example, in Serbia, they're not staying for weeks. They're staying for a couple of days prior to going somewhere else. But, you know, they even in those 5-6 days, they have a need. They have huge needs to be met.
Well, the European powers are going to meet September 12th, I believe, to begin to discuss these problems.
It's something like that. Yeah, something like early September this year. Yeah.
Do you hope to see what do you hope from the outcome of that dialogue?
I hope from a humanitarian perspective that these people, both in Greece, both in Macedonia, in Serbia, in Hungary, wherever they come in, that they will be freely able to go where they are intending to, and that they will be hosted somehow. That Europe will do all possible efforts they can do in order to provide those people with a dignity.
Do you think a quota system, as the French have proposed, is the only way to go here? With all the EU states agreeing to take on a certain higher number of refugees and migrants.
But they already started with speaking with that, but, you know, those are like petite number if you just observe. Slovakia said like 2,000, Poland said 2,000. You know, those are like something what is crossing on a daily basis through Serbia. So yeah. I believe it's like way, what they said at the moment, like it is not very optimistic in terms of sheltering those people or accommodating their needs and accommodating in EU member countries. But I don't know what will be the outcome after that meeting. Will they make something more profound and more important?
So right now they're not being very realistic given the level of the crisis.
No. No, they're not being realistic given on the level of the crisis. They were not being very realistic in provision of the direct aid that is needed in countries such as Macedonia, Greece, or Serbia. You know, in one moment I don't know, are you aware what Catholic Relief Services did with the private funds for just in the first 2 weeks of situation? There was like, we provided some hygiene supplies on the north of country where people are before they're leaving, and some container with a sanitary facility with the 6 bathrooms, so both women, men, boys, girls, and children, they can find some respite and take a shower or something like that. We provide interpreters and doctors. Interpreters are working full every day in a refugee aid point, what is basically the word for camp, that is like people are transiting through and accommodates between 800 to 2,000 people daily, like they're just passing by. So, and also we are having a doctor there 3 times a week. And the minister for social affairs, one ministry that is in charge for that, said at that moment that CRS was the biggest donor at the beginning. So, and it was like $45,000 effort.
So the government was, you know, you're saying the government is not there.
No, government is here. Government is very present. But, you know, you have to know that Serbian government is not the richest one. You know, country in transition. And we had several very severe floods last year that are like still recovering from that. So basically almost one third of the country was under the water. So this new crisis was like... caused additional expenses and stuff like that. And the state is doing whatever is possible, engaging both Red Cross, both international organizations, local NGOs, volunteers, but it's still, you know, it's really, really hard to cope with all the expenses and all what is necessary.
And the EU response so far has been to try to treat this as a local problem for the local governments to handle.
In their countries such as Greece and Hungary, yes, and they waited for a while for some needs assessment that was like, of course, they needed for something like that. And there is a different mechanism for provision of aid to EU members and to non-EU member countries, but they were still waiting. Like they're just recently announced that they will be providing some aid.
Yeah. So the meeting and the 12th, we're hoping, is going to provide some comprehensive approach. Is this crisis, you need something even sooner than September 12th? It seems like this is unfolding in a very rapid pace.
Yeah, that is, if observing like social media and all the networks and news, the situation is different from day from today. Like, for example, we in Serbia, what we are finding now is that everything depends what we will have in a certain day is what is going on in Greece. For example, when we had that blockade of people in Greece with the 10,000 people blocked behind barbed wire on no man's land, we had a situation that we were expecting to have more people like at once. So early warning signs say that there's like that you every day you have like
different situation,
but it is like between 2,000 to 3,000 people are crossing the borders. Yeah. And there is also not only Macedonia, there's like border with Bulgaria that doesn't get too much of media attention because there is not many entries of people from that side, but there is still that side on east of country between Serbia and Bulgaria that also brings people in that are like coming also with the same purpose, just to go through
to Germany and other
brands. Germany, Norway, Sweden. Yeah, that the story I have heard, dear Clark, are horrible. Like I met a lady who lost her. She's with one child. She was in one child in our refugee camp, and her husband and twins. So basically, she lost more than a half of her family, and she didn't even manage to bury them properly. She was just going with the flow. So I was just constantly getting into her brain, and like just I'm thinking like. You know, somebody would stop on the way, but she was like just so afraid. She just wanted to go from that part of the world for good.
Yeah. So people are you know, so did her family members drown or were they die?
They drowned. They lost their lives between Turkey and island of Kos. What is with the speedboat? Yeah, it's like a 15-minute speedboat boat ride. I'm telling you that because I know exactly both locations because it was somewhere where I went for holiday a couple of times in my life. It's like hour and 15 minutes flight from Belgrade, so two.
The women that are making this trip, are they particularly? You mentioned people being robbed and suffering violence. What is happening to some of the women with small children who are making this journey? Are they particularly vulnerable?
They're vulnerable very much indeed, but what I can observe is that those people are sticking together. They're sticking in a group. They learn probably through, basically, they're like now everybody has a smartphone, so they're like communicating with their fellow citizens either back to country or wherever they are now in Western Europe. So they learn how to travel. They usually travel in a bigger groups. So
protect.
They travel like if for example in her case she's traveling now with her brother-in-law and his wife who also lost one child. So just for illustration, so there's like five of them plus also other friends that they know, and then they go together. They're avoiding to travel in the small groups.
Yeah, however. And they're leaving their dead behind as they travel.
That is the scariest possible thing. And so far I read recently there's like a 2,500 just lost their lives during this summer.
Yes, international
lives. In the Mediterranean, yeah. That's some kind of data that they have. And basically those are like, you know, I don't know who is counting those things, you know. Is there somebody else really counting who was lost? Because that was something what she told me in the camp.
Yeah, how many are being not counted is what you're saying.
Yeah, not counted or just disappeared, like entire 50 people on some ship disappeared in the sea.
Sure. And no one would know.
And then nobody know their names, you know, or something like that. They'll be just reported missing for good.
Well, we've all seen the very heartbreaking images of a little child washed ashore in Turkey and in Libya.
Yes.
And that seems to have really roused international attention to this.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think we could be at a turning point for good or for ill here on this crisis?
I am optimist, and I hope that this will end soon.
Yeah.
Somehow, and that, you know, I cannot expect that those people who are like in such a huge fear are escaping, but at least that we will have less and less influx, hoping that, you know, a major power in the world will somehow sit and agree and to destroy the evil, what is...
In Syria, you mean back in Syria?
Yeah, anywhere. Now, and at the moment, like what we are, people we are dealing with in a camp are like 80% Iraqis, Syrians, and 20% are Iraqis. Yeah. And just a month ago, we had 50% of Syrians, and the rest were Afghanistan, Kurds.
Yeah.
So, and then also Pakistanis, Somalis.
So the vast majority.
Northern Africa, yeah.
The but vast majority are escaping conflict.
Are Syrians, yes.
Yeah. But my point is that some politicians are trying to dismiss these folks as economic refugees or economic migrants, but that's not the case you're finding.
Yes, that's, no. People are, we were like talking to UNHCR, and we had a lot of discussions here, and it was like about... we were just talking like, why are you calling them migrants? You know, there are economic migrants from Bangladesh and stuff like, and countries like that. But all these are refugee producing countries. Yeah. Syria is refugee producing countries. In Iraq is, again, it's not like all, you know, beautiful there. It's hard. So
yeah.
They have strong reason to leave their countries.
Yeah. Fear
that's
legitimate fear. Of
yeah,
persecution,
it's fear, and when you talk to them, this is really interesting. They say, "Okay, well, I said, like, who was attacking you?" One of them will say they were like escaping ISIS, Islamic State. One of them were said like they were under the bombs of Assad. One of them said that they were like bombs of rebels. Some of them were like again from ISIS. Some of them were like having problem with Al Qaeda. That's like. Waste a huge difference of you know what kind of you can see that they're like from different locations, that they are not from one certain part.
Yeah. All right, thank you so much, Tino. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. Good luck.
No problem.
With
no
your
problem
efforts with Catholic Relief Services on the border.
Thank you very
in Serbia
much.
And throughout Europe now as this crisis builds. You've been listening to the America Magazine podcast. I'm Kevin Clark.